It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Google develops an artificial intelligence tool for news publishers that can generate text and headlines. Reported by the New York Times, it's pitching the product to newsrooms. Be part of the discussion, exploring ways AI may change the journalism industry. Call in with a question or a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie Beckett is a professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Founding director of its international journalism think tank, Polis, leading the Journalism AI Project. Charlie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great to be here, Kate. Thanks.
Well, take us back in time. Before becoming a journalism professor, you worked for years as a TV news program editor, including at the BBC. How would you compare the arrival of AI compared to the introduction of other technologies in newsrooms you've witnessed?
It's a really great question because I think it's possibly the most significant in a way. I'm getting on in age, and I started back in the 80s as a journalist when there was no internet. And I've seen the digitalization of newsrooms, and then I saw the arrival of the internet when all our journalism suddenly went online. And then, of course, social media comes along 15 years ago or so. And again, that transformed the way that journalism was created and distributed and consumed. And I've been following the AI story for the last 5 years. And that's also very important, but it was largely invisible. It was mainly done by techie people creating, you know, automation of content or perhaps revenue raising. But you didn't really notice it if you were in the newsroom. But this generative AI, you know, the ChatGPT and so on, that is, anyone can use it, whether you're the intern or the CEO of an organization, anyone can put a prompt in and they'll start to get results. And this has completely transformed newsrooms' way of thinking about the future. So I don't know, to be honest, exactly what difference it's going to make, but I've never seen a new technology have an impact so quickly. You know, the take-up has been just extraordinary, and it's provoked all sorts of interesting questions about the future of journalism, whether it will survive, of course, but what's it going to be like in the future? So it's a very exciting or perhaps a little frightening time.
Hmm. And you're trying to measure and investigate the uptake through surveys. You had a 2019 report on AI in this fall. New report will be released on a more recent survey of newsrooms. How is AI being used by media organizations today compared to 5 years ago?
Yeah, it is extraordinary. We've just completed the research for that. We're going to publish it in September. But I can tell you that it is quite extraordinary. First of all, AI is very much present in all newsrooms, pretty much. If you think about it, when you do a Google search, you're kind of using machine learning. But this new generative AI, everyone around the world is interested. Our survey was of 100 newsrooms, literally from, you know, Argentina right across to Asia. And everyone knows about it. Everyone has been experimenting with it, and everyone is thinking how it might change their work. And that can be, you know, tiny newsrooms with just a handful of people, or it can be, you know, the major organizations like the BBC or Bloomberg or New York Times. So the answer to your question is, how are they using it? Well, in many, many different ways. The remarkable thing about this set of technologies is that it has an impact on every aspect of journalism, where you news gather, where you find the stories, for example, then obviously, perhaps most dramatically, how you create the content. And that can be text or images or audio. You know, AI can have a role in that. But at the other end of it, how people consume your news, how you distribute it, the formats and so on. And of course, very importantly, the revenue that you might get from it. Well, AI can have a profound role in that as well.
talking about artificial intelligence in newsrooms with Charlie Beckett, journalism professor at the London School of Economics and Political Science. And you can be part of the conversation at any point. Join in with a question or your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Charlie, you wanted to learn about what small newsrooms think about the use of AI. Why focus on smaller newsrooms with fewer than like 50 employees?
Well, that's one aspect of our work, certainly, because we've seen over the years, and this goes for most technologies, to be honest, that smaller newsrooms obviously don't have the same resources. They don't have the money or the time or the research departments to investigate new technologies and to take advantage of them. And often with these AI technologies, they work best at scale. So if you're a news organization that's processing hundreds of stories in one day, then AI is going to be more useful for you. But we were very concerned. We thought, well, it's really important to have small newsrooms, perhaps local newsrooms or specialist news organizations, which are doing really important work. We don't want them to miss out on the benefits. Because if you think about it, if you're a newsroom, say, of 10 people and suddenly you can replace the work of two people, then suddenly you're 20% more productive. And that's very, very exciting if you're a small newsroom and they often struggle, for revenue. So we've been trying. We've been working right across the world. Of course, small newsrooms are important somewhere like America, local newsrooms, specialist newsrooms. But in countries like, for example, India, where mainstream media isn't always as good as it ought to be. Often it's the smaller and often the digital native news organizations which are the most independent, the most creative, and the most on the side, if you like, of the citizen. So we've been working really hard with smaller newsrooms and we're getting great results. They are finding the tools to access this technology. And the new one, the ChatGPT, the whole point about it, that is that it makes it much easier. You don't have to have a computer science degree to start using some of these tools.
The word plagiarism comes up. Google testing a chatbot the company intends to incorporate into its search tool. Forbes has been writing about it. Its contributor described it as a beautiful plagiarism machine that will likely decimate the online publishing industry. How fair is that description and that concern?
No, I think it's a major concern. I mean, look, there are lots of risks around these technologies. They can make mistakes. They can be inaccurate. They can make things up. They're not always reliable. You have to remember, these are not truth machines. They're not really intelligent. They're just very good at putting together either text or images according to your instructions and according to their training. So I always say that you need to keep the human in the loop. And then there's these bigger issues, as you say, absolutely. Where did they get the material to train these large language models? Well, they got it, basically off the internet. And that has raised, really new and important questions about can they do that for free? Are they breaking your privacy? Are they breaking your property rights and so on? And this is going to be a major, major a legal and economic argument over the next few years. You've got publishers around the world who are saying to the big tech companies, give us some money in return for this, or we're going to try and find ways to block you. And this is absolutely fundamental. The lawyers are going to have a field day trying to sort it out. The politicians are going to have to get involved. And I think in the end, it's in the interest, obviously, of the technology companies to come to some kind of deal with not just news publishers, but the other people that they've been using their content to train those models. This technology has potentially huge advantages, not just for journalists, but for everybody. It could be a big boost for efficiency in all sorts of sectors, from medicine as well as the media. But there are these fundamental questions that it raises, and it's going to be a real struggle to sort them out over the next year or two.
Charlie Beckett heads up the Journalism AI Project at the London School of Economics and Political Science in its think tank called Polis. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Share a comment. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News articles generated entirely by artificial intelligence. Questions about where to draw the line on this form of automation, transparency concerns, and then journalists just wondering how their jobs will change. You can join this discussion about AI at any point. Call in with a question or concern at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie Beckett is with us, professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science, leading its Journalism AI project. Charlie, for years, you know, news organizations have automated the data-driven news stories like financial reports and sports results, and they've used AI to analyze large amounts of data to augment human reporting. Are these uses of AI causing concerns or just a shrug now?
Just a shrug, to be honest, Kate. You know, I think it's, Bloomberg, for example, has been doing this for 10 years. You know, this isn't entirely novel. And the difference with generative AI, though, is that it can vastly expand that into different areas. So, you know, theoretically, for example, and I don't mean to be personal, but we could replace, newsreaders. We could replace radio hosts with an automatically generated hologram or a robot, whatever you want to call them. And it could possibly do quite a basic but effective job of interviewing me, you know, if we trained it in that way.
I shouldn't be laughing.
You shouldn't be laughing. You know, it's possible. But I think that's a good example of the limits as well, though, because, you know, the whole point of an interview, a conversation like this, is it's between two human beings. Mm-hmm. And we've got all your wonderful listeners out there listening, and they're human beings as well. And they want, I would suggest anyway, I'd be interested to hear from your listeners whether they would mind if you were automated, as it were, or does that just, you know, take away the whole basic assumption of a radio show like this, where it's supposed to be about human reactions, which might include your emotional response, as well as your intellectual, rational response to whatever we're talking about. So I think journalism, like many other things, is a very human activity. And if you remove the humanity from it, it becomes a very dry, data-dependent process. And it just lacks that curiosity and enthusiasm that makes us human. You know, the ability to make judgments, to have a moral position or a political position on something. These are all human values that journalists, when they do their job well, that they bring to their journalism. So I think there's obviously a limit to how much you'd want to automate some aspects of journalism, because here's the interesting paradox about this, which is that in a world where you can automate so much of that information, why do you need journalists at all? And I think that's the answer to that is really interesting. It's for all those reasons that they're accountable, that they're understanding, that they have empathy, that they have at least an ideal of truth. You know, these machines have no concept of what is true. They're just generating data. They're just generating language. So I think that in the future, as journalists, we're all going to have to stress those human values more. And I suspect that also means paying a lot more attention to the audience, you know, being much more in their lives, in their communities, getting out of our offices, getting away from our laptops a lot more, living with the people who want our journalism, so we understand what they want from us, and trying to add human value to our journalism.
I heard you say the word robot, and that doesn't align, I think, with human journalism. How do you feel about it being called robotic journalism?
Well, again, I think it's a bit of a weird thing. You know, as a practicing journalist, I remember that being trained in a very formulaic way, quite rightly, because the
Yes.
point of journalism is that you spend most of your time trying to simplify things.
Subject,
That's
verb,
very good.
object. Hello.
Exactly. Exactly. Where, what, why, when, etc. You know, the pyramid structure of an article and,
Yes.
you know, making sure you put, you know, you get quotes, making sure you do double sourcing. It's a very formulaic activity. And when something is formulaic, it makes it very amenable to automation. It's the same with, you know, a factory job. If you're just, you know, tightening up a bolt, tightening up another bolt, that can be automated quite easily. And so there's more journalism that you think that if you can train a human to do it, then perhaps you can train the software to do many of those functions. But I think in practice, yes, you can automate simple things like the weather or financial reports or so on. But in practice, it's quite complicated. And I think the reality will be that most journalists will be using these tools as to support their journalism, to make them work quicker, to gather information quicker, to reformat. You know, if you made a lovely 10-minute radio program, well, you can use this technology to do a cut-down version of perhaps 1 minute.
Summarizing.
To summarize it, for example, or to translate it. Now do the same report, but do it in Spanish for me, you know. So I think it's going to be more of a kind of practical assistant. It's going to be like a really clever, really hardworking intern who doesn't need coffee, which is great, you know.
Charlie Beckett with us, journalism professor who perhaps does need coffee at the London School of Economics and Political Science as we talk about AI in the journalism industry. And your thoughts along the way, there's a line for you at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie, what do consumers of news and media, what to make of it? Should they be concerned about AI-generated stories, or how do the consumers feel?
Well, I think in some ways consumers don't mind. If they get their journalism and it's good journalism and it's reliable journalism, then they're happy. You know, they're not. This might surprise you, but they're not always concerned about journalists' jobs or salaries and so on. They just want the journalism. But I think there is, you know, there's a real problem. We all know about this, that there's a lack of confidence, let's put it like that, amongst the public in journalism generally. You know, they're very worried about, you know, bias and standards and so on within mainstream media. And they're also very, very worried about so-called fake news, about all the disinformation and misinformation and deep fakes and propaganda that they see out there on the internet, especially and on social media. And that makes them rather skeptical about any media, you know, including you know, mainstream journalism. So this is a very sensitive moment to start telling people, actually, we're going to automate our journalism. So I think we have to have great transparency. You know, we have to talk to your listeners or your readers or wherever they are about what you're doing, and you show how you're doing it and the you know, the safety guarantees that you put in place, and you reassure people, look, this is journalism, it's edited, it's checked, we're accountable, you know where we live. If you want to complain, we want to have a relationship where you trust us over time. And I think the AI can actually help you with that. It can make sure that you're fact-checking your journalism better. It can help you format the journalism in a way that people will find more accessible in their daily lives and so on. So I think that's the task that we've got at the moment. If you think about it, this technology is going to make it so easy to create terrible journalism or fake news or propaganda online and so on. It make it so easy to do that that we need even more than ever. We're going to need people who, if you like, provide an alternative, who provide a safe space where you know that you can go to for reliable information. So I think it's really important that we don't leave this technology to the bad guys, if you see what I mean. You know, it's important that good, responsible journalists are using this technology to boost, you know, their chances of getting heard and their chances of providing people with a good service. Because here's the biggest threat, actually, Kate, that this technology presents, which is if you can go on to ChatGPT and say, OK, tell me the latest news from Israel. Give me some background on what's happening with Israeli politics right now. And if you can do that just by going on to, you know, with a few prompts, why on earth would you ever go to a news organization again? You can get your journalism through these new technologies. So it's really important that journalism makes itself, you know, the destination that people will go to for reliable, relevant information that is created for the public in a kind of responsible way.
Hmm. London School of Economics and Political Science Professor Charlie Beckett leads the Polis Journalism and AI Project. There's room for your thoughts in this conversation. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We unpack the latest artificial intelligence systems and their future in newsrooms. As the New York Times reports, Google is pitching an AI product to news outlets. There is room to join this discussion on AI. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie Beckett is at the London School of Economics and Political Science, founding director of its think tank Polis, with a journalism AI project underway. Charlie, recently the U.S. Federal Trade Commission started investigating whether the creator of ChatGPT, whether they violated consumer protection laws, and the commission wants to know how they train their models and handle personal data. Does AI pose a challenge to laws concerning privacy and copyright protection?
Yeah, it's another big area because there are existing laws, obviously, around things like copyright. And there are, you know, laws around privacy. They vary, of course, from country to country. And that makes it complicated because, of course, these systems are trained on data that's gathered globally. And they operate globally as well, across borders. But we have seen in the past, you know, different approaches to regulation. In Europe, for example, there's been more of a focus on regulating, for example, the content and the responsibility for the content on, you know, social networks, for example. In America, you've been more focused on competition, you know, the kind of market regulation around these big tech companies. So there is a precedent here. The idea that they can, you know, disclaim any kind of responsibility is not true. But how we can actually enforce that is very difficult because these systems operate often in quite opaque ways. There are, you know, interesting ways that you can investigate them or do research. For example, there's a lovely website which can where you can search your own name or your own image. It's called something like haveibeentrained.com. And it will tell you whether you've been part of one of these large language model training programs. And of course, if you've been on the internet, and I imagine you, Kate, are on the internet because you're a journalist.
Right.
So it could well be that you and your image has been already used. Now, is that worrying? You know, does that affect you in any bad way, or are you just happy to be, you know, part of the creation of this incredible technology? Well, it raises all sorts of questions. And here's a big clue about why this is a legally interesting area. If you go and look at the terms and conditions of things like ChatGPT, the fine print is very, very extensive. But to sum it up, it basically says whatever you do with this has got nothing to do with us, you know, and we disclaim any kind of responsibility for the way this was trained or whatever you choose to do with it. You know, so they are aware that this is highly contentious, and there's loads of warnings on it saying, you know, do not, you know, be aware that it can be inaccurate. Be aware that there can be biases in the data they've collected. You know, if they've collected the data from just one place, then it may be not diverse enough. And that will be reflected in the outcomes of the content that it creates. And you're probably familiar with this, you know, algorithmic discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sometimes, because it's trained on real world data,
it carries the biases of the people.
It will
who
carry
made
the
it.
Bias forward. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do live in a world of where there's a lot of racism. And so racism will be present in these algorithms. And it's one of the kind of ethical and technical questions is, do you want these machines, as it were, to reflect reality, or do you somehow want them to clean up reality? You know, it's quite an important question, especially for a journalist. You know, we're supposed to be reporting on the world, warts and all, you know. So do we want to use technology that has filtered out all the bad stuff?
Or do we want to look for those signs of bias and those blind spots in diversity? And those are tough questions that we have to reckon with.
Indeed. And if you go to our website, Journalism AI at LSE, you'll see we do a lot of work with news organizations. We work with journalists who do kind of experiments. Mm. They choose a topic and they say, could AI help with this? And one of the most interesting threads of work has been around bias, where people have been trying to use AI technologies to identify biases within the newsroom. Because it won't be any surprise to you, Kate, but humans can be quite biased. You know, even journalists can be quite biased. And sometimes bias is good. If you've got a bias towards, I don't know, social justice, that's probably got a good bias to have. But there are bad biases as well. So they designed technology which would do things like monitor the gender representation in the content of a news organization, for example, with the intent that if you could see it, you would try and correct if there was an underrepresentation, for example, of women, you know, or people of color, then you could use this information, use the AI to correct a bias. And we've got a team working with us right now who are trying to expand that to all the different kinds of biases that you might get within content. A very ambitious program trying to use AI to monitor intelligently what the journalists are producing, and also to help the journalists to counter the bias, suggesting perhaps more diverse sources for them to use. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are all sorts of fascinating ethical issues around this. And personally, that's why I find this really interesting. I'm not a big tech guy. You know, I'm mm-hmm. quite an old-fashioned person. So the technology itself doesn't fascinate me. But what I find so exciting is what it tells us about journalism. You know, what can journalism be? What are the faults of journalism as well as, you know, the positives and virtues? And then thinking about, well, you know, how can we use this technology to improve the journalism that we're offering to people? And you know that.
Yes, it cracks the whole thing open. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, journalism is going through a tough phase. Yes. Everybody. Public radio to commercial newspapers. It's never been tougher in all sorts of ways. And I work with people around the world, and I can tell you it's a lot tougher in most of the world than it is in Wisconsin for the news media at the moment. There are political pressures. There are legal pressures. You know, there are financial pressures. And then along comes technology, and it offers this double-edged sword. On the one hand, it can be really helpful to those hard-pressed news organizations, but it can also be a threat. You know, it can take away their business, literally.
Charlie Beckett, journalism professor at the London School of Economics and Political Science, as we talk about the future of artificial intelligence in journalism. And take your calls along the way. You can join in with a question or a comment. Join in with a scenario at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie, turning to Hollywood, the writer's strike, unionized writers and actors, other creators in Hollywood are on strike, and they're concerned about losing control of their likenesses to AI-generated imaging, and film and TV writers are worrying about losing writing credits to algorithms. Are their concerns justified?
Yes, I think they are. And it's a funny thing, isn't it? But it's interesting to look at other industries.
Mm-hmm.
Take the music industry, for example. You know, 10 years ago, we all thought that the music industry was going to not vanish, but it was losing revenue because of the internet and people sharing music and music streaming. But now it's recovered. The music business is profitable.
Oh, we just lost you there for a moment, Charlie. Okay, I think you're back. Go ahead. Yes, you're talking profitable.
Yeah, just about the music business. You know, it went through a really tough time because of streaming and so on.
Yes.
But now it's more profitable than ever before, and it's also there's more music than ever before, and there's more live music than ever before. And I think, you know, the film industry may be going through a similar process that. The film industry has always used technology. I mean, half the movies that Hollywood produces these days are created by CGI. So it's already playing a part in the way that films are created. And it's going to be used a lot more because you can use AI, for example, to storyboard different versions of a movie much more quickly and easily than you could in the past. And yes, it will be used by people who are script writing as well. So it is a threat, but I think it's also a challenge. You know, if you're a good script writer, then you're going to be more needed than ever before because they want films that really stand out. A few months ago, I went to a play here in London that had been written with ChatGPT. You know, that the writer and the actors had worked with the software putting in prompts, hundreds of prompts, actually, and they came up with this play. And it was experimental. The play wasn't very good, actually. it actually proved the point that, you know, great writing, great creative writing is a very human activity. You know, okay, there's a lot of routine drama that, you know, you might be able to automate to a degree. But that's not really what this technology is good at. It's good at helping you think through things. For example, you know, the image creation of programs like Midjourney can be very inspirational and very creative. And so I think we should think of it as a kind of fuel for creativity rather than replacing creativity.
Would you have thought about it in these same lines, in these same terms, if you went to the play and didn't know that it was created using ChatGPT?
Well, that's the fascinating thing, isn't it? You know, I'd love to know what your listeners think about that, whether they mind at all, you know. I think they would. Hmm. But, you know, the secret is that a lot of so-called creative work is often quite routine, quite laborious. You know, there's a lot of perspiration as well as inspiration with the arts, isn't there? And there's always been a role for technology. If you think about photography, for example, when photography was invented, everyone said, oh, that's the painting over. There's not going to be any more art because people can just photograph things. Well, there's more art than ever before, and there's still a lot of photography. So I think there may be a similar effect with this, that you know, stuff that's easy to create perhaps is less interesting, frankly.
Let's take a call now. Jonathan in Milwaukee. Hi, Jonathan. What would you like to bring up?
Well, very quickly, I would like to just ask the professor a question, notably about the general conversation surrounding the stolen elections now. My guess is there is more conversation generated talking about stolen elections then there are, in fact, conversations talking about the provable problem behind this news. That said, I have a funny feeling that, you know, ChatGPT can generate a lot more lies and can broadcast a lot more lies. And in one way or another, as we talk about bias, how can people protect themselves? How will news organizations protect themselves? Or in fact, we see the proliferation generate a lot more lies.
Jonathan, we're losing you there, and I think we get what you're getting at there. Thank you so much for calling in. Charlie, go ahead.
No, I think it's a really good point. I think, Jonathan, I referred to it earlier, that these technologies, like any technology, can be used for good or bad reasons. And we're already seeing people using technology to create these bots, for example, that can automatically spread millions of messages, often misinformation, disinformation, like around, you know, so-called stolen elections. So definitely you can create more of this stuff. You can also use the technology to identify it and to filter it out. But ultimately, this isn't a technology issue. This is about people. It's people that are spreading that misinformation. And it's people who are sharing it or consuming it. I mean, the actual evidence is that it's probably less effective than we think. I mean, America, you know, wonderful country, but your politics is very polarized. And that's quite unusual. So you're a very fertile ground for this kind of propaganda, this kind of, you know, conflictual speech, this kind of disinformation. And of course, it's a lethal combination with this new technology, that it can make it, it can amplify it, it can make it so more convincing, it can make it at much greater scale. So yeah, there's no solution to it, because part of the problem is generated by real people. But you can do stuff about it. You can create better journalism. You can ask the platforms to try and filter out the disinformation, and you can try and make citizens more responsible about the way that they consume and share information. One of the best things, I think, is actually just to try and ignore the trolls. Don't feed the trolls. And generally speaking, their voices will be diminished.
Professor Charlie Beckett at the London School of Economics and Political Science, founding director of Polis, a media think tank for research and debate around international journalism and society. Be part of the conversation about AI. Call in with a question. Share your concerns at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Google unveils Genesis, according to multiple outlets, including an explainer in the Economic Times. It's an artificial intelligence tool designed to help journalists generate news content. We examine the growing impact of AI in newsrooms and hear your thoughts along the way. Call in with a question at 800-642-1234. Charlie Beckett is a professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Charlie, turning to politics again, the Washington Post reporting this week that President Joe Biden is preparing an AI executive order. Should the federal government regulate how news organizations use artificial intelligence?
No. Generally speaking, I'm not in favor of governments regulating news directly, you know, in the sense of telling them what they can or can't publish. Obviously, there are laws around defamation and, you know, hate speech and offense, and these varies from country to country. So, of course, there are limits on what news organizations should do, especially public ones, like in the UK, the BBC. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a bigger problem than just news, frankly. I think AI, we want to make it, there's a duty of care, if you like, in the same way that we regulate, I don't know, electricity or water or food. I think that you should be setting parameters around these technologies to avoid harm, at least, and indeed to encourage competition and to prevent you know, the issues you talked about, the invasions of privacy or breaches of copyright and so on. And that's complicated, but I think it's doable. But I don't think that I want, you know, politicians telling newsrooms how they should be using these technologies. A lot of the newsrooms I'm talking to have either published or about to publish guidelines for their staff. And that is a really good idea. Telling your staff and perhaps telling your public as well, look, these are the standards we're going to adhere to. You know, we promise, for example, if we're going to use automation, we're going to tell you that we've done it. And when we use this technology, we're going to make sure that it's not discriminatory, for example. And we're going to make sure that everything we do is edited properly still to keep our standards up. So I think there's definitely a lot of work that news organizations themselves should be doing. And I see that they are doing it. I've never seen, Kate, so much good, positive work by responsible news organizations around this technology. They are holding, you know, special education days for their staff. They're setting up working parties. They're drawing up, as I mentioned, these guidelines, for example. And I think that's really commendable, you know, that people are using this as a chance to, you know, evaluate what they do, think about their relationship with their audience, and then think about what they might do with this technology. Because the technology is only as good or as bad as what you do with it. You know, you have to take responsibility, whatever field you're in. Doesn't matter if you're a journalist, or whether you're a doctor or a police officer. If you're using this technology, you have to understand its limits and the risks that go with it. And I think everybody, frankly, would be wise to get a bit savvy about AI, because it's going to be part of all of our lives. It already is. And it's sometimes going to be rather controversial. So I think it's going to be important that all of us have a little bit of knowledge, and certainly journalists should do. Do you know why? Partly because journalists are going to be using it in their newsrooms. It's going to have an impact on you. Whatever your role is, it's going to have an impact in the future. But also as a journalist, you're going to be doing what you're doing today, Kate, which is you're going to be reporting upon a world that where AI is increasingly important. So it doesn't matter if you're the health correspondent or the finance correspondent or the security correspondent or even a sports correspondent, AI and algorithms is going to be a story within those beats as well. So everyone needs to know a little bit about it, I think.
We have less than a minute left, but just taking us across the pond and beyond, if you will, how could AI impact press freedom in other countries?
Well, again, it's really important to remember this. Most of the world has not got a free press. Mm-hmm. It's certainly got less free press than, you know, you do enjoy in America.
Oh, Charlie, we just lost you there. Fascinating conversation, though. Charlie Beckett is a professor in the Department of Media and Communications at the London School of Economics and Political Science, where Charlie directs its international journalism think tank, Polis, leading the Journalism AI Project. And there's still time that you can join in with your email ideas at WPR.org as we carry forward this conversation about artificial intelligence on into the future. And we welcome ideas for future programs from you, you know, and like you, humans, email your show suggestions to ideas@WPR.org. And of course, you can go back and listen to programs and find more conversations from the morning show. Visit WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.